Okay, we're going to begin here on the bottom of Hey Amudet, 14 lines up. It says, Hanicho the Rabbi Meir, Damar, Kola Motayu, Benuniyot. So we figured out how to know that 10 tvachim is the minimum shiur of sukkah from Rabbi Meir's position, because Rabbi Meir believes that an ama is 6 tvachim. So if you do that, you have a 20 tvachim total. The aron and the kaparet are 10 tvachim. The net left over underneath the wings of the kruvim is 10 tvachim. And that's how he gets his calculation. Elo Rabbi Yehuda, learned Rabbi Yehuda, damar ama shel binyan 6 tvachim vishel kelim 5. The Amah of the Binyan is 6, and then the Amah of the Kelim, meaning the Aron and the Kapurot, are only 5 Tvachim, Ma'ika the Meimar. Then you're in a difficult position, because if you take the Aron now, the Aron is going to turn out to be 1.5 Amot, using 5 Tvachim, then you only have 7.5 Tvachim as the size of the Aron. So Aron and the Kapurot kama avalu. How much is the Aron and the Kapurot? That's Tam Yayo Upalgo. The Aron itself is 7.5. The Kapurot is 1 Tafach. That gives you 8.5 Tfachim. Pashalu Chad Sare Upalgo. And then you're going to be left over with 11.5. The 20 minus the 8.5 leaves you with 11.5. The Gemara says, Ema Suka Ad Havya Chad Sare Upalgo. Then it should be that 11.5 Tfachim is the minimum shiur of a Sukkah. Hello, Rabbi Huda. Hilchata Gemiralo. For Rabbi Yehuda, it has to be Alocha and Moshe Misinai. That 10 tfachim is the minimum shiur of a sukkah. Dama Rabbi Chia Barashi Amarav, Shiurim, Chatzitzim, Mechitzim, Alocha and Moshe Misinai. We have three categories that are considered Alocha and Moshe Misinai. We have Shiurim, measurements, certain minimum standards measurements. Chatzitzim is Chatzitza for going to the mikveh, things that cause problems, meaning that they are blocking your ability to go to the mikveh. And mechitzin are mechitzot. Certain rules about mechitzot. We're going to go through each one of these now. Dichtiv, eretz, chita, useora, vegefen, vitaina, v'rimon, eretz, zeit, shemen, dvash. Pasuk found in Pashat Egev that describes the produce of Eretz Yisrael, or what Eretz Yisrael is blessed with. This whole pasuk has said the blessing of Eretz Yisrael is not necessarily in the physical produce, but the fact that its produce is used to measure all these halachic items. They are the halachic standards based on these items. Chita. What is chita used for? The Beit HaMinuga. To tell you the shiur to become tamei inside of a house that has nigaim. Does not anichnas the Beit HaMinuga. Person who goes into a house that has nigaim. V'keilav al-ktefav. And is carrying his clothing on his shoulder. V'sandalav v'tabutav v'yado. And he's carrying his shoes and his ring in his hands. Who? V'hein tmeim miyad. They're tamei immediately. Immediately, because as soon as you enter into the house that has nigaim, you are tamei. And everything that you have with you is going to be tamei immediately. On the other hand, hayala vush kedav v'sandalav v'raglav v'tabutav v'etzbutav. If he's wearing his clothing, and his shoes are on his feet, and his ring is on his finger, hu tamei miyad, he, the person, is tamei right away. V'hein teorim, the clothing remains tahor, ad sheyishaher, until he tarries there, kedei achilat pras, the amount it would take to eat half a loaf of bread. That bread is pat chitim, wheat bread, v'lo pat seorim, and not barley bread. Wheat bread is easier to eat. Mesav ve'ochel, he is laying down and eating, in the normal way that you eat. You're in the middle of a meal when eating would go at a quicker pace rather than moving around. And beliftan, and you have some sort of accompaniment to the bread. You mean a spread that eases the eating of the bread. And that has to do with halacha, because it says, with regards to the bayit haminuga, it says, whoever enters into the house is tamei. And then it says, va'ochel ba'bayit, whoever eats in the house has to be yechabes bigadav. He has to clean his clothing. Well, why does he have to clean his clothing only after he eats? What about shochev? What about all these other activities he does in the house? The Gemara in the end determines that when you enter in the house, you become tamei. The ochel is not only if you eat in the house, but rather it's the shiur, the amount of time that you have to tarry in the house for your clothing to become tamei, when you're wearing your clothing. When you're wearing it as a clothing, for that to become tamei, you have to tarry the amount of time it takes to eat. And that eating, Halacha Moshe Misinai references chita, and tells you that it's a pat chitim, de achilat pras, with the liftan. Se'ora. Se'ora comes to teach you the tanan. Etzem ki se'ora, mitamei b'magav masa, v'enil mitamei be'ohel. You have a bone that's the size of a barley seed, it's mitamei on contact, or when you carry it, but it doesn't have a din of ohel. Dinavola is only you have a kazayit basar with it, or you have rov binyan of the skeleton. Just ezim kisora has a din of tumat maga umasa, that we learn out from the word se'ora. Gefen teaches us kedei revi'it yayin lenazir, the amount of wine that a nazir has to drink, which is a revi'it yayin. That's the way Rashi interprets it in Eruvin, And as Tosafot points out, that's completely incorrect. Rashi over here interprets it differently, and he says what Rashi says over here is right, not what he says in Erevin, because all the shiurim here are not direct. It's not the direct isur. They're setting a standard for another isur. So for instance, over here, by the Beit HaMenuga, the chita is telling you how much bread you need to eat in order to become tamei in the Beit HaMenuga. The Se'ora is telling you the shi'ur for the etzim in order that if someone comes into contact with it, you'll be tamei. Here, Kedei V'ri Yadayin is directly about the isur itself. They're not giving you the measurement of how much wine you need to drink in order for the nazir to be chayav. And therefore, he explains it, and Rashi explains it the same way over here, which is, B'shari Yisurei Nazir. There's a opinion in Masechet Nazir, the Chartzanim, the Lulavim, Ba'alav Mitzrafim, the Shiri V'Utiayin, that the pits and the shoots and the leaves of the vine also contribute towards the Revi'at Yayin. How do you measure that? You measure that with Yayin. You take wine in a cup, and then you put these items into it, and they displace a certain amount of wine. So that displacement tells you how much they contribute towards their Revi'at Yayin, how much they are worth in a volumetric size. I'm telling you that now Yayin is being used now to measure these items. What Rashi's point is that had you used water in the displacement, you would actually get a higher level of displacement when you use water, because Yayin is more viscous and it has higher surface tension. So when you put items into water, more water will displace than with wine. So the fact that you use wine to measure it makes a difference in the volumetric displacement when you put items into the wine. So Rashi says that when you measure it, you take a coast full of Yayin, and then you put these solid items into it until you've displaced a revi'it of Yayin. Then you'll know that if you eat these items, you consume the revi'it worth of solid items. We measure it based on the displacement of the wine, and we're talking about the solid objects, not the wine that he drinks itself, but rather that the wine is being used to measure another object. So now it's indirect. That's the way Rashi explains it. Tosafot spends some time here discussing the opinions in the Gemara Nazir as to whether someone has an achila that's measured by a liquid or a drinking that's measured by a solid, and whose opinion is what. So Tosafot spends a lot of time on this, trying to figure out whose opinions these are and who does it follow. But the basic concept that Rashi lays out, Tosafot buys into, which is that we're measuring solid objects through a liquid. Te'ina is kigrogeret lotzat Shabbat. That is the standard for hotza'ah on Shabbat. Not that you carry the fig itself out, you're carrying a food that is measured by the size of a fig. If you carry the standard measurement of food carried on Shabbat is the size of a fig. There are other measurements in the Gemara on Shabbat, specific foods or specific items, but the standard is, if you don't have a measurement for it, grugoret is the standard of food that is carried out, that should be chayav for carrying on Shabbat. Rimon, the Tanan, kol klei balei abatim, shiuran ki rimonim. All of the kelim of balei abatim, their shir is ki rimonim, the size of a pomegranate. Now this, we saw actually back in the Gemara in Hamatznia, in Shabbat, and there was a major controversy between Rashi and Tosafot as to what this means. Rashi over there, it says it's talking about a kli cheres, talking about a earthenware utensil. And that's the measurement to tell you when an earthenware utensil is no longer a utensil. So it's not mikabel tuma. Tosafot argues on two levels. One is that this din is found in Masechet Kelim. Masechet Kelim is divided up by materials. You go through Masechet Kelim, it goes through materials and gives you all the dinim of certain Kelim. This din is found within the materials of the wooden Kelim, not the earthenware Kelim. So he says, first of all, this is the standard for wooden Kelim, not for Kli Cheres. He says, well, what does he do with the Gemara in Hamatznia? The Gemara in Hamatznia seems to indicate we're talking about Kli Cheres. At the measurement there is ki rimon, size of a rimon. According to Tosafot, the Kli Cheres is not measured by a rimon. So Tosafot gives an alternate explanation, which we'll come to in a second. What he is suggesting, what happens here is that you have, the Mishnah there in Kelim says that if you have a utensil, wood utensil, that gets a hole in it. If you get a hole in it, is it still a Kli? So he says, if it's a professional or it's someone who's selling this item, as soon as it has a hole in it, it's no good anymore. You can't sell an item with a hole in it, even though it's still functional. Nobody in a store is going to buy something that's already got a problem in it. On the other hand, a balabayit already has something in use and gets a little hole in it, he doesn't mind using it for something else because he already has it in service for himself. So therefore, if it gets a hole the size of an olive, he'll just move to bigger items. So he'll move something bigger. He'll put in dates there instead of olives. And so on and so forth, until he reaches a rimon, the size of a rimon. Rimon's the largest fruit that you're going to get into. There the Gemara says it's three together, three in a bunch together. Tosfot says that's way too big a size to have three together, but rather it means that three together, either they have to all be able to exit when they're still attached, one by one, which makes it harder than if they were separate, or probably the more logical explanation is that when they grow three in a bunch, they go three in a bunch, they're a medium-sized rimon. Whereas if you have less in a bunch, they're too big, more in a bunch, they're too small. So the rimon that you're measuring with is when they have three in a bunch. So that's, once it has a hole the size of rimon, you can't use it for anything anymore. That's when they throw it in the garbage. That's when it's no longer a kli. So now Tosfot says that applies to kliyates. By kli cheres, he says that the standard size of the kli cheres is kizeitim, is like a zayit. Gemara in Matzniyah says it has to do with the rimon. There, Tosfot says that's only if he's miyachedet, if he changes its function. So stam, which is the default status of a kli cheres, is once you get a hole the size of an olive in it, it's no longer usable. It's no longer a keli. Wood kelim, until you have a hole the size of rimon, is still usable until it gets to that big a hole that you won't use it for anything. On the other hand, if by a kli cheres you specifically designate, after it gets a hole the size of an olive, you say, listen, I'm going to use it for something else that's bigger, then it becomes a kli again. You restart. The difference being whether the tumah carries forward or is it a reset. If you have to reset it each time, then it's as if you got a new keli when you designate it for something else. Now, it would make a lot of sense what Tosafot is saying is because wooden kelim would be very expensive. Wooden kelim are expensive, and therefore, if you got a hole in it, you wouldn't just throw it out. You'd keep using it until it really wasn't functional anymore. Kli cheres in their day was the equivalent of our paper goods or one-time use items, and they would throw them out. So here, when they have kli cheres, unless you re-designate it for the larger item, then the assumption is you get a hole in it, you throw it out, because you're not going to use it anymore. So that's the way Tosafot explains this concept of rimon here. Then we continue with the pasuk, which is Eretz Zeit Shemen. Zeit Shemen, it's Eretz Shekol Shireh Kezeitim. A land in which all the Shireh are Kezeitim. It says, Kol Shireh, Sakadat, how could you think that? Ha'iko Hani, Damrinon. We just had a whole list of items that were not Kezeitim. Ela'ema Shirov Shireh Kezeitim. The majority, the default status of Shireh is Zayit, unless you have specified other words. Dvash, we just finished up Masechet Yoma. Dvash is Kekotevet Agasa B'Yom HaKippurim. Is the size of a date, that's the amount you have to eat in order to violate the inui of Yom HaKippurim. Almo Deoraita Ninu. So there you see that these are all Deoraita. All these Shiurim are not Halacha L'Moshe Mitzrayim. They're mentioned in a Pasuk in the Torah. So Gemara says, V'tizbra Shiurim Iktive. Wait a minute. These are all drushot from the Pasuk. This is not like it's written in the Torah. It just tells you a fruit, tells you an item. That doesn't mean that that's the written in the Torah. Ela yochata ninhu, there are lochot l'moshe misinai, ikra, asvachta bi'alma. Pasuk is simply a hint towards the lochot l'moshe misinai. And that's what Tosafot points out over here. We mentioned it when the Gemara, in the end of Yoma, there's a machloket about the girsa in the Gemara at the end of Yoma, when the Gemara asks about whether shiurim are doraita. So Rashi amends the girsa there to read, onchim are doraita, because Tosafot says we're missing this whole Gemara. Anywhere in Shas where they bring up this issue of Shiurim and whether they're doraita, they quote the whole pasuk and they go through that. In the Masechet Yoma, it's missing completely. So he says the girsa there should not be that the Gemara is asking Shiurim doraita based on the pasuk here of Rav Chanin because they don't bring that. But rather, what Rashi changes the girsa over there that it means onshin mi doraita, and then the Gemara says onshin michte ktive. The onshim are written. They are written explicitly in the Torah. And then the Gemara answers Shiurim shel onshim. The Shiurim of the onshim are the halacha l'moshe misinai. If you remember, at the end of Yoma, there was a machlok about the girsa. It's dependent on this Gemara here, because this Gemara reads totally differently when it's talking about shiurim rather than onshim. So that's one. One thing was, we said shiurim are halacha l'moshe misinai. We just discussed all these different shiurim that are a halacha l'moshe misinai. Now, next thing is chatzitzim. Things that block, cause a problem in terms of going to the mikveh, that they are a hefsek, they are a break between you and the mikveh waters. So that is also halacha l'moshe misinai. The Gemara asks, chatzitzim deoraita ninu. That's min haTorah. Dichtiv rachatz bisaro b'mayim. Says that he will put himself into the water. And the Gemara there says, bisaro b'mayim means his flesh, means that he has to be in the water. Right? Shelo yedavar chutzitz bein olu ben amayim. There should be nothing that interrupts between you, your flesh, your body, and the water. Ki atayu chutal l'se'aro. Right, the halacha l'moshe misinai is not about his body, it's about his hair. to tell you that hair also has a din of chatzitza. The Rabbi Barachana, the Amar Rabbi Barachana, nima achat kishura. If you have a single hair tied to itself, you knot a single hair on itself, chotzetzet. That's a chatzitza. Shalosh, if you take three hairs together and knot them back on to each other, then einan chotzetzot. Because when you take one hair and you knot it, you can pull it very tight, then the water won't get in. Once you have three hairs and you try to tear them together, then you can't get it tight because the hair is hard. When you have a soft item, you take three of them together, you can pull tight and it'll tie it tight. Hair, because it's a, more of a hardened material, then when you tie three together, there's enough gapping in there. It won't get tight enough that you can't get the water in there. Shtayim eni yodea. Says, by two, I don't know. So now the Gemara says, aron amido raita ninu. The hair is also a din d'oraita. Dichtev rachat et bisaro b'mayim. Now the word et is et atafel l'basaro. Et comes to include something that is secondary, tertiary to his body, and that is the hair. So the hair also has a din of chatzitza min haTorah. May nihu seoro. That's what the et comes to include. Ki ata hilchoto d'ki Rabbi Yitzchak. D'aloch ha'lamoshinei v'sinai. Comes to teach us the din of Rabbi Yitzchak. D'amar d'Rabbi Yitzchak. Devar Torah rubo u'mapid alav chutzitz. If you have the rove covered and you're makpid and you would take it off, I mean it bothers you that this item is there, then there's a problem in the mikveh. She'enu makpid alav. Even if it covers the rove and you're not makpid on it, it's not chutzetz. V'gazru. And then they were gozer al rubo. She'enu makpid mishum rubo makpid v'amito makpid mishum rubo makpid. Let's work on the rule first. The rule is, in order to be able to have a chatzitza in the mikveh, you have to have, first of all, be makpid. Makpid means it's something on your body that you would wash off. You're not going to leave it there. It's not going to remain in this status because you are uncomfortable with what is on your body. It bothers you that this piece of dirt or whatever is on your body is there. That's number one. Number two is SB rove. Rove of what? Rashi says, we're talking about se'ar here. Talking about the hair. The rove of the hair has to have a problem of chatzitza in order for there to be a problem to oraita. Tosafot, the Rabbeinu Tam already raises numerous issues with Rashi's explanation and says, when we're talking about rubo, we're talking about the rove of your body. Not the robe of your hair. Rubo makpid alav is not about hair, it's about the entire body. To have a chatzitza, that's where robe is determined. There are others that want to suggest that the robe applies to both, hair and the body, and they're counted separately. Meaning that both of those independently are counted. Robe of your hair would be a problem, and robe of your body would be a problem. But when we go to measure robe, we measure hair separately, not just the hair on your head, the hair on the entire body, and then you measure your body separately for robe. So there's two different calculations being done here, one for the hair and one for the body. Again, Rashi says it only has to do with your hair on your head, and Tosafot says it has to do with your whole body, period. But in either case, in order to have a chatzitza in the mikveh, very difficult. Extremely difficult to have chatzitza in the mikveh. Rashi says either your robe of your hair is covered like in cement or plaster got on your hair, or each one of your hairs, the robe of the single hairs, are tied on themselves. You know, so that's very difficult to have. A chatzitza mid oraita, or alocha lamoshe misinai. But what comes up is the gzeira de rabbanan. The gzeira de rabbanan says, okay, mina Torah or alocha lamoshe misinai is rubo and makpid. You need both of these items in place, which is it has to cover the robe of your body, and you have to want to remove it. So the chamimer goes there if you only have one of the two. So if it's on the robe of your body, even though you're not makpid on it, it's problematic. And if you're makpid on it, even though it's not the robe of your body, then it's problematic. By the way, that's most of the chatzitzot that we run into is exactly that. It's a place where you're makpid and not robe of the body. The likelihood of having robe of your body or robe of your hair is very low. So most chatzitzot are problems of you're just makpid. You're going to remove it. You're going to wash it off. And therefore, it's a chatzitza midrabanan because you're makpid, I love.
The things like rings and watches.
But most people do take off their watches when they go in the shower, and when they do certain things, they take them off.
Yeah,
right, so rings that stay on all the time are not a chatzitza anymore. Yeah. So that's true. If you can't get the item off, it'll no longer be a chatzitza, because it's not makpid alav. He can't take it off, so it's not coming off, because it's not makpid alav. Now, midrabanan, again, you have problems if it's just rubo, or just makpid. Over here, you don't have either. It's not rove, and it's not makpid. So in that case, it's not even going to be a problem to rabbanan. So that's what the Gemara says here. She'enu me'akpid alav, enu chutzetz. If you have no akpada, it's not chutzetz. V'gazru, here's the gzera. Arubo, she'enu makpid. If you have robe without akpada, mishum rubo ha'makpid. Because of, you might get the other item. Val mi'uto ha'makpid. And this is where I tell you most of the problems come up, is where you have a mi'ut, but you're makpid on it. Then you have to remove it, mishum rubo ha'makpid, because you might end up getting the robe. V'ligzor nami al mi'uto she'enu makpid. You have four permutations here. Four permutations are rubo and makpid. Rubo without makpid, makpid without rubo. And then neither of the two. So out of three of them, they're asur. One d'oraita, two of them d'rabanan. The Gemara wants to know, what about that last one? When there's no rov and no makpid, they say, why don't you make gezeira there too? Why don't you gozer, nami al miuto she'enu makpid? When it's not the rov, and you're not makpid, be gozer, mishum miuto ha makpid. Because it might come to miut ha makpid, or inami shum rubo she'enu makpid. Because you might get to the next stage. So when it says, he gufa gzeira, v'ana nikum nigzer gzeira gzeira, that whole stage is already a gzeira. Now you want to put another gzeira in place because you're worried it might come to the gzeira, and the gzeira might come to d'oraita. The whole point of the gzeira is to prevent you from getting to d'oraita. We don't have to prevent you from getting to the gzeira. So that doesn't work. So that's why we have the halacha l'moshe m'sinai. This is the halacha l'moshe m'sinai that we're speaking about with regards to chatzitza. Is when is there a problem? D'oraita, there's only a problem by rubo umakpid. After that, we're talking about dinei d'rabanan. By rubo, enu makpid, or makpid, and miuto, those are dinei d'rabanan. Miuto and enu makpid is totally fine. So that's a din d'rabanan. Obviously, there's an afkamino if you have a safek or you have other issues, whether we're talking about a din d'rabanan or a din d'oraita. So halacha l'moshe m'sinai tells us what is a chatzitza mi d'oraita is only rubo umakpid. Next thing we discussed was michitzin. What are mechitzin? Hadi amran. That's what we said. That's Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda's position, that 10 tvachim is the minimum shiur for a sukkah. So that's mechitza. Hanicha, the Rabbi Yehuda. That works well for Rabbi Yehuda. Elo Rabbi Meir, ma'ika the meima. Rabbi Meir, who goes out the 10 tvachim from the, under the wings of the kruvim, why does he need this din? Halach l'mosh m'sinai mechitzin? Ki ata yuchada l'god ulovod v'dofen akuma. We have other principles in Mechitza that are halacha l'moshe m'sinai, including good asik, good achit, lavud, which is less than three tefachim, is considered if it's not there, dofen akuma, which we learned on Friday's daf, the four amot of the skach, they can have horizontal walls that go out from the vertical and turn into the horizontal walls, dofen akuma, and you have god, which is god asik, god achit, which is that the wall drops down or goes up as long as you have a minimum of 10 tefachim. So all of those dinim are halacha l'moshe m'sinai. And that'll apply equally to Rabbi Meir as it does to Rabbi Yehuda. So he needs the halacha l'moshe m'sinai as well for these items. Right now, the Gemara moves on and says, v'eshein la'shalosh tifanot, doesn't have three walls. So we said before, there's a machloket as to how many walls you need to be the minimum shiur of a sukkah. So then we had a machloket. First of all, the Chachamim say you need a minimum of three walls. And then before we had the Rabbi Yaakov, who says that you just need pillars on the side, as long as there are tefach in each direction, that was sufficient. The Chachamim say you need three walls. So how do you know that you need three walls for a sukkah? Tan Rabbanan. Shtaim ki ochatan ushlishit afilu tefach. You need two halachic walls, means full-fledged walls, 7.5 tefachim long, 10 tefachim high, full-fledged walls for two of the walls. Ushlishit, the third wall, afilu tefach. Only has to be a tefach. We'll come at the end of today's daf. We'll start discussing what that means. Rabbi Shimon Omer, shalosh ki ochatan. You need three halachic walls, urvit afilu tefach. And the fourth wall can be a tefach. But my kamiflege, what is the machlok between Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim with regards to whether you need three real walls and then one that's a tevach, or two real walls and one that's a tevach? It says, Rabbanan savra yish eim lemisoret, v'Rabbi Shimon savra yish eim lemikra. That the Chachamim believe that you look at the way the words are written, and Rabbi Shimon says you look at the way that they are read. Rabbanan savra yish eim lemisoret, we look at the way they're written. In the Torah, two psukim in a row in Parshat Emor with regards to sukkah, there it says, Basukot teshvu shivat yamim, kol ezrach b'Yisrael yeshvu basukot, and then here it says that you have to sit in the sukkot, ki basukot ushabti et b'nei Yisrael b'tzilotam eretz Mitzrayim. Three times the word basukot appears in those two psukim. That basukot, twice are written chaser, one time it's written malay. So now you have basukot, 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 you can see it here. Two that are chaser, one that is malay. Harikan arba. If I look at im lemesoret, the mesoret is the way it's written in the Torah, I have four walls here. I have sukkot, sukkot, that are written chaser, which makes like sukkat, sukkat, which is one. Then I have one that's written malay, sukkot, which is two. That's a plural. So I end up with four. Dal chadugufe. You need one to teach you that you need a sukkah. That's the essential drush, the fact that you need a sukkah. Pashlut lata. I have three left for a drusha. Shtaim ki hilchotam, two of them are lochik, v'ata hilchota, l'locha l'mishinai, comes and tells you, v'garata l'shlishit v'ukma tefach, tells you, take the third wall and only make it a tefach. So that's the position of the Chachamim. Rabbi Shimon savar yesh eim l'mikra. We focus on the way that you read the words, not the way that they're written in the Torah. If that's the case, then you have basukot, 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 three times, not written, but the way you pronounce them makes them like they are plural, because you're saying basukot. The pronunciation each time is basukot. It means you have three times the plural basukot, that gets you six sukot. Harikan shesh. Dal chad kral de gufei. If you take one off to teach you that you need a sukkah, then pashalu arba. Now you have four left. Shalosh gehil chatan. Three walls halachically. Atay hilchata begarata levit ukmata atefa. And then the halach b'moshe misinai comes and takes the fourth wall and takes it down to a tefa. So here's the machloka between the chachamim and Rabbi Shimon. Question is, when you have those three words, basukot, do you focus on the way they're written in the Torah, or you focus on the way they are pronounced based on the Mesorah, how they are pronounced? If you focus on the way they're written, you have four manifestations of sukkah, because you have two that are chaser, which means that you would read it basukat, which would be singular, versus the one that's malay, which would be basukot, that gives you four. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon views it as, how do you read it? All of them, when we read them in the Torah, basukot, 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 means you have three that are plural, you end up with six. Now, this issue of im lemikra, im lemesoret, Tosafot already raises the issue here. He adds it in many other places in Shas. He says that we find, like Rabbi Shimon himself, over here says, yish im lemikra. You go by the way it's read. But we have many other places in Shas where Rabbi Shimon says, im lemesoret, im lemikra. So Tosafot says that everybody holds, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Shimon, who are the two main figures here that have differing opinions all over Shas, everybody believes that there's im lemesoret and im lemikra. And we're going to darshan both of them. The only time you have a question of precedence is when they're soter each other. Is when, if you did Eim LaMikra and Eim LaMisoret, the drusha from each one of them would now be contradictory. So now I can't have both. So when I can't have both, which one do I give precedence to? I have to pick which one is the right one. Is it Eim LaMikra or Eim LaMisoret? But not to say that Eim LaMisoret is never, or Eim LaMikra is never. It's just that in a case where I can't have both, which one do I give precedence to? And that's what he says Rabbi Shimon is saying over here. Here, where I can't say both Eim LaMisoret and Eim LaMikra, because you're going to come up with two different answers. Therefore, what do I give precedence to? Rabbi Shimon gives precedence to Eim LaMikra, the way that it's pronounced, not the way that it is written. No, that's the problem. Tosafot raises the issue that he's not consistent in that way. And Tosafot here leaves it as a kasha. He's in Sanhedrin, another place where he deals with it. And he tries to reconcile. He does it in Shita Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shimon. He tries to come up with a way to reconcile why, in certain places, they pick Eim LaMisoret and Eim LaMikra, and are not consistent in giving precedence to one or the other. He gives that thesis, but he does point out, gives you all the questions on the thesis where that doesn't work exactly. Here he doesn't answer it. In other places in Shas, he does try to answer the problem. So the Gemara terms it as Mesorah being for the way it's written and Mikra for the way it's pronounced. But you're right. Both of them are Mesorah because you wouldn't know one without the other. If you're pronouncing it Sukkot, you should write it with a Vav. In fact, we don't. It's the Mesorah. But if you had that, only the Mesorah of how to write it, then you would pronounce it Sukkot and not Sukkot. So you have to have a Mesorah of how to pronounce it as well. All right, so now the Gemara says, Ibaitem. The Gemara is giving a couple of other possibilities of how to explain the Machloket between Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim. Ibaitem adukule yama yish im lemikra. Everybody believes it's the way you read it. This is what they argue about. Mar savar schachacha bayikra. That the schach requires a pasuk. Mar savar schachacha lo bayikra. The schach does not require a pasuk. If you have Eim LaMikra, then you have six instances of the word sukkah. One of those times in Sukkot, you're going to use it for gufei dekra, to teach you that you need a sukkah. Then you're left over with four instances of sukkah. If you believe that schach requires a sukkah, then you need another one of those sukkot for schach. Now, you do run into a problem now, because technically if you use another one of the words for sukkah for schach, then you're only left with two instances of sukkah. And that's certainly not what the Chachamim say, one wall that's real and one that's a tefa. So you have to argue that in the remaining four instances for schach, you don't need one word, you just need one of those instances of sukkah to be used. So that's the way you're going to have to explain the Chachamim's position. So now, you have four instances left. Rabbi Shimon says all four of those instances are for walls. Schach, by definition, a sukkah has schach. That we saw in the beginning of the Masechta. Rashi says, what's the definition of the word sukkah? That means schach. So we already have one for gufei dekra, to teach you need a sukkah. Sukkah, by definition, requires schach. That includes it. That's the way Rabbi Shimon learns. Therefore, he has four instances left over. I have four walls. Three of them halachically full walls. One of them, the halach moshmi sinai, takes down. On the other hand, the Chachamim say the word sukkah does not necessarily include schach. And therefore, I need another word to teach me schach. Once I do that, I only have three instances left. So two of them are for full walls, one of them for the halach l'moshe misinai. But the problem is, Rabbi Shimon's right. I mean, the word sukkah, by definition, includes schach. So why do the Chachamim need a new word, sukkah, to teach you that? So the Ran suggests that that teaches you that the schach is not just schach, but schach has halacha. There's certain halachot with regards to the schach. Those are all the halachot that we know with regards to schach. Like, otaseh ve'lo min asui, they have to be put on after the walls are put on. You have all these other halachot that deal with the schach. That's what it means, schach. It doesn't mean that you have to put schach on, we know that. But there are halachot about the type of schach that you use. That's what the Ran says. The Aruch Naner argues on the Ran and says that all of those halachot are learned out of different places. We're gonna see throughout the Masechet Sukkah, they have limudim for them. He says that this actually teaches you that all three walls have to touch the schach. That's what the Chachamim are saying over here. That the three walls must touch the schach. In order to be a kosher sukkah, the fact that I need an extra word to teach me about schach teaches me it's in the same rubric as the walls. We're learning the walls out of the word sukkah here. And then we're also learning schach out of the word sukkah here. What does that teach you? The walls must touch the schach. Which is against the halacha that we learned before, that if you have a mechitza that's 10 tefachim high, we look at it as if it reaches up to the schach. But he says, based on this, that it has to reach it. Now, that has implications, obviously halachic implications, of whether you can use good asik. You can say that the wall goes up and touches the skak. That's number one. And number two is, what's the problem of, for instance, taseh v'lo min asui? The Rama quotes that if you put on skak before you put up the walls, he says it's a problem of taseh v'lo min asui. And where does he learn it? Where? He learns it from the word basukot. He learns it out from here, like the Ran, who suggests over here that basukot teaches you the halachas of skak. So Rama quotes the halacha that taseh v'lo min asui comes out of this limud over here. Right, so that's another way to explain their machloket. V'ibayitema, here's another possibility. Kulei ama yish im lemisoret. Everybody believes the way it's written is the way that governs. So that means now I only have four instances of the word sukkah. V'achakam minflugei, marasavar ki atay hilchata legoro. Marasavar ki atay hilchata lehosif. When halacha l'moshe m'sinai, does that take one of the walls, existing walls, and take it down to a tefach? Or does that add an additional wall of a tefach? So here you have four instances of sukkah. One of them we use to teach you about the key word sukkah, that you have to have a sukkah. So you have three left. So do I say the three that are left, two of them are lachik, and the lach l'moshe m'sinai takes the third one and makes it a tefach? But I say, no, I have three full walls, and the lach l'moshe m'sinai adds a fourth wall that is a tefach. So that's another way to explain their machloket. V'vayitema. T'kuliyama ki atayokata l'goro. Everybody agrees that the lach l'moshe m'sinai take one wall down. V'yishim l'misoret. And the way that it's written in the Torah governs, that means you have four instances of sukkah. They argue about whether you need to be doresh tchilot. That means, I have a word in the Torah that teaches me that I need a sukkah. So we until now have said, okay, you gotta drop the first instance of sukkah, because that's teaching me the din that I need sukkah. I can't make a drush on that. That's a question. Maybe the word sukkah, at the same instance it teaches me sukkah, also teaches me the drusha, because otherwise use a different word. The fact that he used the word sukkah to describe it teaches me both I need a sukkah, and number two is, I can have a drush on that word, that I have four instances of it. Marzavar doshim tchilot. Rabbi Shimon believes you are doresh tchilot. Therefore, four instances of sukkah, even though I need one of them to teach me I need a sukkah, that one also can be used for a drusha. So therefore, I have four walls, and I have to take one of them down, so I have three real walls, and one is a tefach. On the other hand, chachamim, marzavar ein doshim tchilot. We say, no, when you use the first word to teach you need a sukkah, that cannot have a drusha associated with it. So I have one word assigned to be the core word to teach me sukkah, and then I have three left over for a drusha.
And that's more consistent throughout Shas. Usually they say, okay, you know, we use this word for drusha, and then...
It's not as consistent as you're suggesting, because the Gemara in many places in Shas says tarte. Why does the Gemara learn tarte out? Because the Gemara says you could have written it in a different way. So the fact that you didn't use it in a different way teaches you two dinim.
Tarte is the change.
So that's what you could argue here too. The word sukkah by itself gives you a definition. Why doesn't it use chupa? That's what the Gemara said. Well, how come it doesn't use the word sukkah? It could use the word chupa, something that protects. Why does it use sukkah? To teach you sukkah. So therefore, the word itself could teach you this din without having it exclude the drusha. So the fact that it utilized the word might be enough to get you the drusha. In Shas, we have both of these instances. Sometimes where the Gemara says we need one for the core halacha, and then we drop it and everything else is a drusha. Or the Gemara might say sometimes, well, the fact that it used this word and not another word already teaches me the core halacha, and now I can have a drush on top of that. Right now, the Gemara says, Rav Matna Amar, Tamei de Rabbi Shimon Mehocha. Rav Matna comes up with a totally different reason for Rabbi Shimon's position, which is the Pasuk in Yishayahu, which we actually had, Sukkah, Tiyad Tzel Yomam Mechorev, Ulim Machseh, Ulim Mistor Mizerem Umi Matar. That the Sukkah will be for shade during the day from the heat, and as a refuge and a cover, mizerim, from the storms, umi matar, and from rain. So then, how do you have a sukkah that protects you from all of those items? So Rashi says, well, If you don't have four walls, you're not going to be protected from the storms and from all the rain that's coming in. They're coming from the side. So you need four walls to really have protection. So that's how he knows that you need four walls. The Rishonim explains it. How many things are you being protected from? So Taima de Rabbi Shimon HaKrai, Sukkah Tiel Etzel Yomah Mechorev, that's one. Ulemachseh Ulemistor, that's two. Zerum Matar, that's two. Rabbanan Amrei, Zerum Matar Achat. Zerum Matar, one thing. The storm and the rain are one item. So the question is, how do you count the items in this pasuk? Tzel, shade. Machseh Mistor is two, is protection. Then Zerum and Matar, is that two or one item? That'll give you three or four. And they explain the whole machloket that way between Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim. Now, Ba'oto Tefach, we're getting now into this a little bit. We'll give a taste of it, and we'll finish this tomorrow. It says, Ba'oto Tefach Heichan Mamido. Where do you put this Tefach? I have two walls, and then where does this Tefach go? Samarab Mamido Keneged HaYotzei. It goes, Keneged HaYotzei, you can see the pictures in Rashi. Pictures in Rashi show that you have two perpendicular walls, and then the third wall, which is this Tefach, has to touch one of the two perpendicular walls. So that makes your third wall. You have two pictures of that in Rashi over here that indicate what it means. Mamido keneged ayotzei. Amrle Rav Kahana, Rav Asi the Rav. So Rav Kahana, Rav Asi had challenged Rav. So Vayamindero keneged Rosh Tor. She put it up like a Rosh Tor. Shatik Rav. Rav was silent. Let's start with Shatik Rav. What does that mean? That Rav is silent. The Baal HaMor is certain that when Rav is Shatik, that means that he doesn't agree. He rejected it completely. The Ramban in the Milchamot argues on the Baal HaMor, and he gives a list throughout Shas for Shatik Rav, and the Gemara after asks, what does that mean, that Rav was Shatik? If you're so certain when Rav is Shatik, that means he didn't agree. Then why are you asking me, what does Rav mean? He says it's clear that unless the context tells you otherwise, we'd have no clue what Rav did when he was Shatik. That means either he acquiesced, or he didn't answer them because he didn't agree. We don't know here. There's just no answer here. Right now, what is this Keneged Rosh Tor? This Keneged Rosh Tor, is it very difficult? You see a picture here in Rashi. Picture in Rashi is based on the Marshal, and is only one opinion. The way the Baal HaMor describes it here, he says, Rabu HaPerushim. He says, there are limitless numbers of Perushim here as to what this Rosh Torah means. And he says, I like Perush Rashi. But when he says, I like Perush Rashi, it's not necessarily like the picture we have here, because he has a different view exactly of what Rashi meant. Rosh Torah is a terminology that's used in Kilayim and other places, which means the end of the row. The end of the row is where when they plow along, you finish off the rows. It happens to be in their day that sometimes they didn't have a row that ended on a straight line, but the rows ended on an angle. So we're definitely talking about something that's on an angle. When it's on an angle, what is the setup of the angle? So here you have the Marshal who gives you the option here of putting on an angle, which is you have two walls, and then the third one, the Tefach, is not straight like we saw in the other pictures, but tilted on a diagonal inward. So that's the way the Marshal reads it. The Maharam gives a different opinion to me, which seems more likely to be Rashi's opinion here, which is the Maharam says you have the two perpendicular walls. He says that third Tefach is actually on the hypotenuse. It's in the middle of the hypotenuse, the middle of the hypotenuse of the Tefach. And then you'll say that's the Rosh Tor, because then you'll just extend that wall to two sides to meet the ends of the perpendicular walls, and you have basically a triangle that you'll come out with. The reason that they say this is because Tosafot over here asks a question from the Gemara in Eruvin, which is that the Gemara in Eruvin says when you have avir and avir, you have airspace on both sides of something, it's mevatelet. So Tosafot seems to indicate there's avir on both sides of the Tefach over here. There's airspace. The way the Marshal has it written over here, it's clear there's no airspace on both sides of the Tefach. It's only on one side of the Tefach. So therefore the Maharam believes that it's actually on the hypotenuse of the triangle in the middle, you have a Tefach. The Marshal gives two alternative explanations. One of them seems to sound like the Milchamot, who argues on the Baal HaMor as well as to what it is, which is that the Tefach here, it looks like, if you look in picture number bet on the right here, along the side, you can see it looks something along those lines, which is, you have perpendicular walls, and then you have the Tefach that's off that perpendicular wall, but not all the way to the end. Not all the way to the end, but a little bit off the wall. So they're asking, but then you can have Rosh Tor, which is you draw a line from the ends of the Tefach to the two ends of the perpendicular walls, that will give you your area. That's what a Rosh Tor is. Anyway, there are numerous explanations of it. I'm just giving you some of a feel of the different explanations of what this Tefach is. Then we have Amar Shmuel Mishmei de Levi, Mamido Keneged HaYotzei. V'chein Morim Beit Midrasha, Mamido Keneged HaYotzei. We have from Shmuel, as well in the Beit Midrash, that when you have the Tefach, it has to be adjacent to the two perpendicular walls. So now, that's the end. As the Ramban says in the end, it really doesn't matter what you think about Rosh Tor. Even though we don't know what Shatik Rav meant, because Shmuel and the Beit Midrash all agree with Rav that it's Mamido Keneged HaYotzei, the question of Rav Kahana and Rav Asi goes by the wayside anyway. Even if you say shatik rav means he acquiesced, it doesn't mean anything here because we have other opinions, and it's clear that mamido keneged yotzei is the right halacha. So it's only theoretical to understand what shatik rav means because we clearly have too many opinions that say mamido keneged yotzei, not like Rav Kahana and Rav Asi. All right, we're going to stop here because then we're going to get into the more detail what exactly it means, the mamido keneged yotzei and the tefach, which we'll get to what the real halacha is regarding this third wall. Okay, we'll stop over here.
I don't get